CataractCoach.com podcast series episode number 95 with Dr. Eric Mertens. Words of wisdom for success in your refractive surgery practice. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I have a very special guest, a friend for, gosh, more than 20 years. From Antwerp, Belgium, my good friend, Dr. Eric Mertens. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Ide. It's fun having this today. You in the morning, me in the afternoon, and having a little chat about I don't know what yet, but I'm curious what you want to talk about. And indeed, we know each other for, like 30-something years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. The only difference is I look older, you look the same.
No. We at that time, we were young and beautiful. Now we're only beautiful.
I'll take it. Now tell me a little bit about your path in ophthalmology. You got interested in ophthalmology at a very young age.
Yes, true. True. I told you the story and I will repeat it, of course. So when I was very young, I had some accommodative strabismus, esotropia. And at that time, it was common to have surgery for that. So I was like 3-4 years old. And I had to go on regular checkups with my ophthalmologist. And I was very fascinated by all that lights and those instruments they used at that time. And I got really interested in that. And I told my parents, I was about 12 years old, and I said, like, I want to be an ophthalmologist. And they were laughing at me, saying, yes, that's nice, Eric, but we'll see. So, and that's why I ended up in ophthalmology. And because I had an accommodative esotropia, I still have 3D vision, because that's lucky. So that helps when you're doing surgery, as you know.
Yeah, for sure. And tell me about your practice. Your practice is, you do a lot of cataract and refractive surgery, but you also do other things too, right?
Yes, true. Well, I started as a refractive surgeon. Even when I was a resident, I did my first PRK in 91, when I was still at the University Hospital in Antwerp. And I did my first LASIK in 97. Also, I started very fast, very soon, with phakic lenses. It was also 92. I did my first iris claw at the Artisan IOL. But during my training, I was training in many other things like corneal transplants, strabismus surgery, blepharoplasties, Dacre-Cysto rhinostomies. So I did almost everything except the posterior part of the eye. So no vitrectomies or other stuff like that. So I was purely anterior segment. And in that regard, I think I did almost everything.
And in your practice now, you still offer all those different services or you're just cataract refractive?
Well, of course, we are now 5 ophthalmologists. So we can specialize more in our field. We have a glaucoma specialist, a medical retina specialist, one is doing vitrectomies, a pediatric ophthalmologist. So I'm more focusing now on all refractive surgery in general. So that's and I'm training now a fellow who is in his first year now in refractive surgery. He's a young guy from the Netherlands. He's very eager to learn, and I'm very happy because, as you know, we need to train those young guys. As you did, how many did you train during the years? It's very important to train the next generation so they can pick up the good work, actually.
Yeah, no, that's very important. To train the next generation is an important part of what we do. And we do this obviously by teaching residents or fellows, but in addition, even on the podium, we try to spread our knowledge and show our mistakes and learn from complications. How did you get started on the podium? Because we first met because we were giving lectures together maybe 20, 25 years ago.
Yes, exactly. My first was in 1997, I think. Yes, it must have been 97, so 27 years ago, quite a while. Well, I got interested because I must admit I'm a bit lazy, meaning that reading those articles and so on, I'm lazy. So, and when giving presentations, I force myself to deep dive into a subject and read about it. The same thing when you're going to the gym. I don't like working out, so I have a personal coach who forces me to do those exercises. So it's the same thing. When I'm not forced to do something, it's more difficult.
Yeah, it makes you efficient. To be able to teach a subject, you really have to know it.
Exactly. And by that, I keep on the tip of my toes, and I'm trying to be introducing new technologies in my country. So that makes it, I think it's, yeah, we all know how to talk to patients and do the surgery, but learning new things, introducing new technologies makes our field so impressive the last 30 years that we were in it. Look at the evolution we have seen. It's incredible. And it keeps on coming. And that's why it makes ophthalmology such a beautiful specialty.
Yeah, that's the truth. I mean, it keeps changing, keeps evolving. You've been a very early adopter for almost every technology.
Well, I think so, yes. I did the first bilateral LASIK in my country in 97, actually. It was very controversial at that time. Doing two eyes at the same time was not done. And it was quickly adopted. A couple of years later, most of my colleagues started doing it in the early 2000s. I was one of the first to start a laser center of my own with a few colleagues together, but still that was outside of a hospital, which was at that time unusual.
Right.
I started with femtosecond lens surgery in 2012. So also the first in the country and introducing trifocals, introducing phakic IOLs like the ICL and so on. I implanted the first EVO ICL worldwide, also when it was CE approved. Of course, not as early as Zaldivar or as Roberto, because he made this all himself, but the first official one. And all that because I'm interested in new technology. I'm always fascinated by new technology. And I think it's very important to offer our patients in the best they can get. So I think it's very important that you can, yeah. I treat actually my patients like they're my family. When someone is seeing me and there's a young patient, it can be my daughter or my son. And I was thinking, what would I do with this patient when it was my son? So I'm trying to offer in my, with my knowledge, with my experience, the best possible solution in those patients.
Yeah, that's a great acid test for any procedure. You think for the patient, okay, if it was my family, my son or daughter, what would I offer them? What would I do? Or in some cases, you would say, you know, I wouldn't do surgery for you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very important sometimes to push them away and say, okay, it's too early. Well, when you see those patients in their early 40s, 45 years old and starting to wear reading glasses, and they have excellent distance vision, always tell the same, like your distance vision is so good, wait until your distance vision also diminishes, and then you will, because your expectations, when we do a full range of focus IOL in your case, you will lose some distance vision and you will not be fully satisfied. And I don't like that. Patients need to be satisfied and then need to know what to expect, which is very important.
Yeah, that's one of the most challenging. You see a patient who's 48 or 50 years old, ametropic for the whole life, and now the patient's presbyopic and wants a treatment there. What do you offer those patients?
Very difficult. As I said, these are very difficult to see what their expectations are. And most of them, they said, I do not want to compromise on this vision. I only want to get rid of reading glasses. And before touching those eyes, I have a very in-depth conversation with them that they fully understand that when they want it, when they say, I want it, and I want it as soon as possible, that they will lose some distance vision. And only then we would proceed with that. But most of those patients, they understand that, like, okay, it's a compromise. And as you said, I will wait. I tell them myself, I have perfect distance vision, perfect intermediate vision, but near, I need some reading glasses. And I'm not ready to go for surgery yet because I do not want to compromise my distance vision and my intermediate. But when that fades away, then I'm totally in. I would have that Ranzli placement surgery as soon as possible, but not now because I don't want that compromise for distance in my
For let's say, you know, doing a refractive lens exchange with a full range lens, you'd wait till there's at least some degree of lens opacity, nuclear sclerosis.
Well, it's not about nuclear sclerosis or opacity. It's more about what can we give them when they when we get older. We tend to introduce some or myopia or some hyperopia, and then I'm much easier in offering that technology. Again, when I can improve that distance vision together with their near vision, that's of course the ideal situation, and which makes our lives much easier, but also for the patient to understand what's going on.
So patients who see you with actual cataracts, let's say older, 70 years old with actual cataracts, you really emphasize the need for a full range lens.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the thing is, I did a lot of lenses. I started with a crystal lens like 20, 25 years ago. And I was offering that in my practice. I did all the models of the crystal lens. And we told our patients, you will have good distance vision, good intermediate, but you will still need plus 1.5, so the sheeters for nearby.
Sure.
They signed an informed consent, so they knew what was going on after surgery. So when they came in 1 month after surgery, they were a little bit dissatisfied, doctor, I still need some reading glasses. I said, yes, I told you. Yes, you told me, but I paid more. So I expected actually that I was a bit of an exception. I said, no, I told you so. So that's, I don't like that. 1 month after surgery, seeing that patient who is not fully satisfied because he still needs reading glasses. Now, there are some interesting technologies around the corner, which were introduced already many years ago, like the Lumina IOL from Aqualens, which is an accommodating IOL. Jorge Alio started that like 10 or 15 years ago. And I started with that lens also recently. So there are two optics sliding. You put the lens in the sulcus and slide again over each other. And I must say they don't have any dysphotopsias for distance. Their intermediate is good and they're near, because the newest model has a plus 3.5 diopter at. They're very good at near as well. So there are some solutions which are around the corner who can become mainstream in the near future. The only difficulty, of course, is you have to place them in the sulcus. They're custom made, because when they're too large, they do not work. When they're too small, they do not work. So you need exactly that dimensions. And then I will make the lens. It takes up to 60 days. But you see, it step by step, we are getting there. And I hope that we will not have the discussion about these dysphotopsias again in 5 to 10 years. So because this is the most difficult part of the information to give to our patients nowadays, with those trifocal IOLs with the full range of focus, that they will have some glare halos, starburst, whatever, some waxy vision sometimes. You don't want that. So these are things, finally, I hope that we will end up with the technology within the, 5 to 10 years, that we don't have those complaints for distance vision anymore.
So you're pretty confident that we're going to have truly accommodating IOLs coming in the relatively near future.
Well, I was very skeptical before implanting that Lumina IOL. I thought it's an improved model of the crystal lens, maybe, so it will keep a little bit of accommodation. But the first patients I implanted, they are ecstatic. The first one I did was a truck driver. So I told him, you will see distance, you will see intermediate, you will see your instruments, your GPS. But for near, you will still need reading glasses. And that guy is without glasses, even in the dark. So, not the dark, but in dim light conditions. So he's very ecstatic. And by not over-promising what he would get, of course, those patients, he's ecstatic because he got much more than I informed him he would get. So that's I'm very confident that these lenses will become mainstream in the near future, and there will be some improvements in the future as well.
I think you bring an important point, which is it's very important to set appropriate expectations and then also under promise and then hopefully over deliver, like for your patient here.
Exactly. Yeah. So what that's the value for the patient, of course. So when we're talking to patients, we are not talking about price. We're talking about value. What will what I mean for you? As I had to understand it in the past, that in the past I was upselling my procedure, so offering the monofocals, and I thought, yeah, maybe you can have some near vision correction as well, and that's hard upselling. The same, so we our strategy changed from upselling to downselling. Every patient in our practice is a candidate for a full range of focus lenses until proven otherwise. They have the corneas, or maybe their retina is not as good good enough. So in these cases, we downsell. But actually, and also the mindset of the team is like, okay, we can give you a solution which gives you freedom of glasses for the rest of your life. When your retina is, of course, in good condition, and when the team is with you, and also did some surgeries on my team members, which helps a lot, of course, because then they have firsthand experience, which is the best there is, and by doing that strategy, the satisfaction of patients was rising, and also it creates a vibe in your practice that we can help patients getting free of glasses. Freedom of glasses the rest of their lives, which is, I think, this must be our goal, to give them the best possible vision, the most comfortable life. More of us are being active until they're maybe 75, 80 years or even older, an active lifestyle. So good vision in all distances is important with an active lifestyle. So I think this is a mindset we need to inform more and more of our peers that this is the mindset we need to have in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a very different way of approaching it, because I think you're right. Most practices offer it as an additional thing, and then you're saying no, offer it as the standard. And if they have a condition that prevents you from having it, like say macular degeneration, well, then you'll downgrade to the monofocal because that's what's best in your condition.
Yes. Because the patients, also we charge one price for the lens. When there's a toric correction or not, doesn't matter. We give them one price for freedom of glasses. So we don't have to discuss like, oh, we're going to have an increased range of focus or a full range of focus. No, one price and you get the best for your eyes in my center with the technology we have nowadays. So we don't discuss about prices, that price. You confuse your patients with like, yeah, they want of course the best, and it's like, oh, I cannot have the best. No, one price for all, except for the monofocals, which we use only in like 8% of cases. They get monofocals, all the rest get the best possible lens we can give them, and that is the highest price. So in that regard, we can explain to our patients, we get monofocus, like, okay, your retina, you have a macular degeneration, you will only get 20/40 best corrected vision. We're not going to put in those other lenses because you will lose contrast and your vision will drop even more. So that's why it's because of that. So also our retinal ophthalmologist, our medical retina specialist, knows that very well. So she brings already that message across to the before they sending those patients to me, like, okay, you will be only a candidate for monofocal. You will still need reading glasses because of the condition of the retina. So by working as a team, it makes your life easier, and also your patients, they feel like when we bring that message across as one team to the patient, we have the same message all over in the clinic, in my practice, which makes life much easier for the patient to understand what we can offer for them in their condition.
Wow, that's interesting. So I think a lot of people, like maybe me included, sometimes make the mistake of trying to explain to the patients the differences between the different IOLs. And you just say, let me give you the full range and I will decide what's best for your eye. I don't have to explain to you, do you need bifocal, trifocal, EDOF? Why confuse them?
Exactly, exactly. The same thing when you go to a restaurant and you have like 30 choices, which are like lobster and langoustine and a nice steak. And in the end, like, I want them all, but you cannot get them all. But what is the best decision at that moment? It's very different. So when we tell our patients, we're not talking about price because the price is the same. And our mindset is we will give you the best IOL for your lifestyle, because it's also important to discuss the lifestyle of the patient. What do they expect? And we can deliver, or we try to deliver to them what they expect in their daily life. Are they going all days outside? They're doing a lot of sports, or they are at the computer for many hours. We discuss with them, what do you want? What is there? And then I'm the expert, and I will choose that lens which fits your expectations and your desires the best. So the patient doesn't choose.
That may be a better answer. Instead of trying to make the patient the junior ophthalmologist by studying and explaining all these little differences, it will just confuse them even more.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Make it simple. Make it simple and easy. Because patients, they do not understand what we are explaining. They do not.
Right.
Is an EDOF lens or what is it? What is it? That's it. Okay. Tell me what you want. Tell me your lifestyle. What do you do during the day? What are your hobbies, your activities? Tell me, are you retiring in a few years? Yes or no? All those things. I think this reduces your chair time significantly, even during the consultation, because you don't have to discuss all that different type of lenses. And especially after surgery, also your chair time is really comes down significantly, because you as an expert decided which IOL was the best for that patient.
Yeah, I think we have plastic surgery colleagues here in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills who do something similar. They charge one fee for the face, and that includes your facelift, your blepharoplasty, your brow lift. It's a very high fee. It's like as much as a house in some parts of the world. And but for that, they don't have to, it's just everything done. And maybe we should be doing something similar.
Well, I think we can learn a lot from our colleagues in plastic surgery. So they're not talking about full range of focus and increased range of focus. Well, the breast augmentation is a breast augmentation. How they do it, they do not say it. It's like, okay, what type of breast do you want? Do you want that? Okay, I will decide how to do it, where to make the incision, and so on. So, and make it easy, because the patient, they get confused. When they get confused, they will not go for the surgery. They will see another colleague. They maybe tell something else, which may be as good as your solution, but it's a different solution, and they confuse them and they run away. When they go to plastic surgeon one or plastic surgeon two or three, but do they say, okay, we will augment your breasts and you will end up with size D or E or whatever. And that's the way to do it, not confusing patients.
Yeah, I know. I think that's the right way of doing it. There's a lot of overlap there. Like, we see it in even our patients. You do someone's IOL surgery, and then post-op, all of a sudden they can look in the mirror a lot clearer and say, wow, I didn't know I had so many wrinkles, or I need... Then they work with their plastic surgery colleagues, or sometimes the opposite. They have plastic surgery first, and they say, I look so much better. I wish I could see so much better.
Okay, yeah, it's good. That's why, actually, I have an aesthetic clinic in my practice. Huh? Did you know that?
No, tell me. I didn't realize.
Okay. So, well, we started like 15 years ago, offering some services like Botox, fillers, like skin resurfacing, and also over-the-counter supplements like omega-3, collagen tablets, and so on. So, because as you said, a lot of those patients say like, oh, I see better. So now I see how old I am. I see all my wrinkles. And then we can visit our colleagues here just down the hall, and they can improve it. And that's why we can help each other in creating some business. One of the things I always give to my patients is omega-3 supplements, because for the dry eyes, but I always tell them as well, like, and the ladies love that because omega-3 is anti-aging, it's anti-aging properties. And ladies love it, of course. They say, like, okay, we'll take the omega-3. It's good for dry eyes, but on top of that, it's anti-aging. So, yes, I will take it. Sure. And, yeah, and by that, you actually, we give them the omega-3 tablets for free. We give them 1 month in advance and 6 months post-operatively. So, okay, that's for you, no extra charge. And there's like, okay, I get something for free. Of course, the price of it's including the price of the surgery, but give something for free. It's a gift, and everyone likes to get gifts. And yeah, so they feel, hey, they care about me because I get all that extras, which I don't get with my colleague down the road.
Interesting way of doing it. Now, for an ophthalmologist, it kind of seems almost natural to, you can also get into the cosmetic or aesthetic side just with blepharoplasties. I mean, yep, we're trained to do this in our residency and fellowships. Are you offering blepharoplasties as well?
Yes. We offer. I do it myself as well, because it's something different than putting in a lens or doing corneal refractive surgery. And I like to do it because it's a different mindset. But actually, the patient population is very similar, because we are not treating a disease. We're treating something they have a problem with. They want to get rid of their glasses and contact lenses, or their appearance, they want to work on their appearance, but they're not sick. I always tell my colleagues in refractive surgery and also my team, so our patients are not sick. They want to improve a function of their eye or their appearance. So we have to treat them differently than really sick patients. So that's the mindset here is I think very important.
How do you deal post-op with a dissatisfied patient? Like you brought up earlier where you had a patient who put crystal lens and then they say, I know you told me I would need reading glasses, but I thought I'd be the exception. How do you deal with that mindset?
Well, Uday, that's very difficult, as you know. When you have an ocular surface problem or like they still have some refractive error, easy peasy. Sure. Yes. But then you have those patients, you'll know them, and they're 20/20 unhappy, uncorrected, and like, what in the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And I try to spend a lot of time with those patients, talking to them, trying to understand their problem and say like, okay, everything is right. The lens is right. Your eye looks healthy. And sometimes you cannot pinpoint what is going on there. Then you have two solutions. It's like, okay, let's take out the lens and put in another one. I did in some cases.
Okay. But
remember one case, she had a bifocal IOL. The coma was terrible for her. So I explanted it and I put in a trifocal IOL and the halos were there. So I explanted focal, I put in a monofocal. Guess what happened? She still saw halos and glare. She was still dissatisfied. So sometimes you cannot find out what's going on. And yeah, sometimes we also have things. So what do you want? I can give you your money back, but then your problem is not, like, we cannot solve your problem by that. And most of those patients say, no, I don't want the money back. I want you to take care of me as long as possible. I will try to do my best to find out what is the problem with you. We will try maybe alpha gam drops to bring down the pupil at night and all that stuff. But some cases are just perfect and they're unhappy. Luckily, there are only a few of them, but yeah, sometimes it happens. And then I think you have to be very open and honest to the patient. Like, I did all my best. I did the best I can. Maybe see another ophthalmologist because I don't know everything. Maybe right. I've seen something. Yeah? I don't think so, but it can happen because we're not perfect. And they appreciate it that you're honest and open, and I think you have to deal with those patients in this open mindset way.
I mean, some of those are impossible to solve. Like this woman, you said you took out the bifocal, put on trifocal. Okay, take out the trifocal, put in a monofocal. And yeah. She still has the same glare and halos. I mean, where are the glare and halos coming from? Between the ears?
I don't. Yeah, that's what's going on in the heads of patients. We cannot measure it. We cannot see it. And yeah, that's sometimes you have to be a very good psychologist, taking a lot of time. And it's part of our job, I think, to listen to our patients and try to feel, try to understand what their concerns and their anxieties about their eyes.
Are there warning signs you can pick up during the preoperative consultation to say, oh, this patient may not be happy after surgery?
Yeah. Well, you have the typical profiles. I'm not afraid of lawyers. Engineers are, in my practice, still okay. But accountants I find the most difficult, because 1 + 1 is always 2. They cannot understand that when you put 1 by 1, it can be a 1.9.
Right.
So I'm very careful in treating accountants. And then, of course, you have those patients who keep on asking, oh, I saw, I Googled and I saw the lens from that company. I want that lens. I said, yeah, right. But that's a good lens for you. Yeah, but there were good reviews about it. And I said, yeah, but that's not a good lens for you. So that's not the case. So I don't treat those. I remember one case. It was a lady, was a nurse, and she came for myopia correction surgery, and we found out the ICL would be the best solution for her.
Okay.
But she had the pressure was borderline, and we saw some changes at the optic disc. So I said to her, I will put some stents, some eye stents in your eye, and then I put in the ICL, and then you will be good. She said, I want to consult a glaucoma specialist. I said, okay, yeah, consult a glaucoma specialist. So she came back and said, okay, the glaucoma specialist said, put in the ICL, and in 6 months, we will put in the eye stent. But this doesn't make sense,
because
you're narrowing a bit the angle when you put in an ICL. It's much more difficult to put the eye stent. It's easier that I put the eye stent and immediately after the ICL, and you also have to be once in the eye. She came back after a month and she's like, no, doctor, I stay, in my opinion, you did the ICL and the glaucoma specialist the eye stent. I was like, okay, but look what's here. I ordered your ICL. Here are your ICLs. Please go to someone else, because I'm not going to put in the ICL and then after the eye stent. Not good medicine.
Right.
And yes. So she went away. And I don't think that you can satisfy those patients. And even if they're in danger for themselves, they do not understand that twice in the eye is more dangerous than only once. They do not understand that's more difficult when you have a narrow angle to put the eye stent in, and so on and so on. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to discuss with you anymore. You know it better. Here are your ICLs. You paid for it, and good luck. Sometimes you have to, some people are unpleasable, and they have their mindset. They have their thinking about what is the best for their eyes, and they're completely wrong. So yeah, that happens.
Yeah, I think the balance, I mean, I want a patient who has a good understanding of the situation or what we're going to do. But when they start doing hours and hours and days of Google research and homework, and they come to you and they start asking questions, which you think, wow, how would you even know these words?
Yes, you know? Exactly. These are the dangerous ones.
Right. I had a patient say to me, which FACO machine are you going to use? I said, oh, do you mean FACO machine? I have many different ones. Do you have a preference? Well, I saw online that this machine's better than the other one. So I was like,
That happens, and but they keep on surprising me. But that's also the beauty of our job, I think, that you always have contact with so many different personalities, and you're trying to figure out which one is in front of you during the conversation.
I think for me, the warning is if a patient has just very unrealistic expectations from the surgery, and then I try to talk them down and try to reset a normal or reasonable expectation. And if I still can't, and the patient still seems unreasonable to me, I'll just very kindly say that I'm gonna choose not to do your surgery because I don't think I have a technology or technique that's going to be able to satisfy your needs. And so for that reason, my advice is don't do surgery, at least not with me.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing as well. I tell them what your expectations are. I cannot meet them, so I'm not going to do surgery on you. So please see another one. And that's as but you cannot pick them all, Sometimes
They
the
get through.
yes, they get through and like, oh shit, I should have I shouldn't have done the surgery here, but that happens. That happens.
I think we get better with time and understanding this. If I look back on my career when I was about 30 years old or 32, 33 years old, I just didn't understand this as well. And I just had patients who, really got through the cracks and you do their surgery and you're like, why are they so disappointed? And as you get more and more experience, you kind of get a better sense of, okay, who am I able to satisfy? Which patient is a red flag?
Well, in the beginning, when you start as a surgeon, you want to do surgery on almost every patient which is coming by, as you know. And then sometimes, you do very difficult cases, and I'm like, ooh, maybe I'm not at that level yet. We've all been there, done that. And who isn't guilty can throw the first stone. But I think it's normal. You're young. You're eager to do the surgery,
Right.
and yeah, and the older you get, it's like, okay, I know my boundaries. I can do this, but maybe that is a little bit too high. I will send it to another or a vitreoretinal surgeon first, or whatever. I think, that's part of experience, huh?
It is. You kind of realize your limitations, and you realize what's actually better for the patient. So I used to, years ago, do sutured lenses with Gore-Tex to the sclera in patients with no capsular support. And then I soon realized that a better option is one of my former residents who's done a retina fellowship and is a surgical retina specialist. I can send the patient to him. He'll do a full three-port harsh plane of vitrectomy. He'll suture the lens in and have a beautiful result. So now I do is I do the lens calculations. I send
Okay.
the patient to him. I'll tell him a slightly higher IOL power. So that post-op, the patient's going to end up a little myopic. Let's say minus one with minus one astigmatism at 90 degrees. And then 3 months after he sutures the lens in, I'll do LASIK and make it plano. And the patients are so happy.
Yes.
It's so much less grief, so much easier.
Well, since 2 years, I have a vitreal surgeon also working with me. Which makes our lives so much easier in those cases, as you mentioned, but also when you do lens replacement surgery and those patients have a full range of focus IOL and air floaters. You know those cases like, oh.
Yes.
And by doing that under local anesthesia, removing the floaters, they're so happy afterwards. I'm much more comfortable doing lens replacement surgery. Now I have that in-house surgeon who does the vitrectomies and the floaterectomies. Because it's easy to tell, like, okay, you have floaters and they bother them a lot. So let's do the surgery. We can do it in the same environment, free of charge, no problem at all. And that makes the word of mouth so important in our clinic that by offering a full service under one roof, they like it. They like it.
Well, that's kind of unique that you could have in one roof. You could come do your lens replacement surgery with a full range lens. You can do your vitrectomy if you have floaters that are very bothersome. And you can even get a blepharoplasty and get some skin treatment. We get like all in one. I love it.
Yes, at least here.
At least the face, of course. No, that's a brilliant idea. You know, you've been very successful in your practice. I've loved how it's evolved over the years.
Well, you get more insights in how psychology of the patient works. And as I said, giving them something. When we did a blepharoplasty, we told them, you need that serum to put on your wound and you need to take collagen tablets. And it's another €200 costs. And they said, oh, no, I'm going to my pharmacy because there I can buy stuff at €100 costs. But those products are not as good. So what did we do? We raised the price with €300. We gave those products for free. And now they're like, wow, but they pay actually more than before. But it's included in that price. And there are no hidden costs. They don't have to get those another. They don't have to put take their credit card out of their pocket to pay for that €200 extra. They get it for free. And that makes such a game changer in those patients to go for the surgery.
I think it's what you said earlier. It's about value.
Yes. Yes. And also the perception is very important. Huh? Perception, right. How they were treated, what value we can create for them. So actually, we are focused on why we are treating patients. As I said, we are not focused on the technology we're giving to. We're not talking about the technology we use. As you said, that patient is asking about the phaco machine you're using. Not the phaco machine, it's a surgeon who uses the machine. Right. I think, in my opinion, is more important than the phaco machine itself. For nowadays, of course, though, our machines, they're all good. But it's so important to bring that message across to the patient that we will give you value for money. Not talking about the money, but we give you value. And then it's for them to decide whether to go forward with the surgery, yes or no. And make the choices as the amount of choices, limit them as much as possible.
Right. I think it's important to also remember that we're offering patients great vision for the rest of your life. Every day, every waking moment, the rest of your life. You get the Botox, that's good for about 3-4 months. You get the filler, that's good for maybe a year. Even to get your blepharoplasty, okay, maybe 10 years. When I do your IOLs, this is 30, 40, 50 years worth.
Second, yeah. And more patients understand it, that it's value for the rest of their lives. And also, what we try to do is we ask those patients to give a Google review for their experience. We have a QR code in the offices we are seeing our patients. And we ask them, can you scan the QR code? And we leave them in the room for a couple of minutes so they can give the review immediately online. Because when you ask them, then they go home, they forget to give you the review. And then it's only the patients who are unhappy who will give you the review online. So this is actually very important, I think, that you also get the word out of your happy patients and do it when they are in your office sitting next to you or just they had a talk with you and expressing their how happy they are and that was one of the best decisions in their life. So you will hear the same message in Los Angeles of your patients as well, like, oh, this is my best decision in my life to have that surgery and get rid of glasses.
Yeah, that's a great, I like that problem. I have to do that. Yeah, get one of those QR codes and they come with their phone post-op, they can just scan it and then boom, they get right to the review. They can just quickly do it right there, right then.
Right there, exactly. You can, you have to grab them when you are in your office.
Oh, great idea. Now, our podcast, the listeners are the full range. We have ophthalmologists who listen to our podcast from their 30s and some even in their 70s. We have the whole spectrum. But most tend to be on the younger side, under age 50, 30s and 40s. What advice do you have for a young ophthalmologist who says, gosh, I'd like to be successful like Eric? What are the best things, bits of advice you could give a 30-year-old, 35-year-old young ophthalmologist who's just starting into practice?
Okay. Well, when you're doing more and more lens replacement surgery to get those patients free of glasses, then first, your own mindset has to be like, every patient is a candidate for the full range unless proven otherwise. Secondly, train your team in that mindset, educate them, and if possible, when you have in your team members who are wearing glasses, offer them that surgery for free so they can talk to the patients and say like, okay, I got the surgery. Look, I read the smallest print. I can see distance and so on. Thirdly, when you do your pre-op examinations, make sure that your pre-op diagnostic workout, you do everything. You measure, I give an example. I measure the keratometry with my autorefractor with the MS39, which is an anterior segment OCT with the IOL master. When those K readings are more than 0.5 diopters off, I don't like it. So I look deeper into it. Look at the corneal surface, specifically the tear film and the epithelial thickness. When there's something off, I will first treat the ocular surface. I give them, I told you, the omega-3 tablets. I give them the drops and even IPL for free, or punctum plugs when necessary. And I let them come back in 4 to 6 weeks. We repeat at the breakup time. We look at the epithelial thickness map. When these measurements are good, then I'll only will trust my biometry measurements. And look at the retina, of course, that there are no hidden pathologies there. But in like one out of five cases, I send my patients home and let them get in after 4 to 6 weeks to remeasure it. And colleagues, they say like, oh, but then you lose that patient. I said, no, I'm not losing that patient, because I'm explaining, and when I'm putting in the lens in the eye, do you want the right power of the lens, or do you want a maybe right power in your lens? It's one extra visit, but I can make sure that the power will be right, except for cases post-arcane, something like that. That's a different story. But I think the ocular surface, look at the ocular surface and treat it before you rely on your biometry. I think that's key when you perform those, it's a high-level surgery. You want to be spot on after surgery. You want to be as close as plano, reduce the astigmatism of less than 0.5 diopters postoperatively to get that optimal result with these high-performance IOLs.
Wow, those are great pearls. Those are some things that are just not so frequently taught.
No? Well, that's my experience, and I think it's to dive deeper a little bit, when I did that, introducing that ocular surface, just focusing on that before relying on the biometry, my retreatment rate dropped from 9% to 3%.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That nature, you can say, 6%, as one out of 16 patients who needed a touch-up, which is, I think quite significant, because it costs more, because we offer them the touch-up, word of mouth is less, and so on. So actually, it's a snowball effect. The lower retreatments you have, the higher the satisfaction, the more patients will come in into your practice.
Ah, those are great pearls, for sure. Now, it's often in Europe, you have access to technologies before we do in the USA. We're a little bit slower sometimes because of the FDA approval process. What are some new technologies you're using now, or you will be using in the near future, that you're excited about? You mentioned one, MS39.
Yeah. Well, MS39 is FDA approved. Is FDA approved now? So that's I think it's recently beginning of this year, if I remember correctly. We have the Evo ICL is also approved in the States, like 1 or 2 years ago. We had a ability to use it from 2012 already. So, and that was actually in refractive surgery businesses in Europe, a game changer. So we see that trend in the US now, that more and more US surgeons are using the ICL for lower diopters. And it's available for -3 diopters onwards in the States. In Europe, it's from -1 and upwards. So all those technologies. I mentioned the Lumina IOL, the accommodative lens. It's available in Europe, not in the States. Another great technology, which I was so fortunate, it was the first trifocal IOL to be developed by Damien Gatinel and Physiol at that time, which I hope will be FDA approved by ESCRS next year, so in September 2025. The Define Vision probably will be approved. I'm using that lens. I use that lens in over 10,000 patients now.
So, wow, so that's your go-to lens for full range.
It's, well, I use the other ones as well, but I'm always coming back to Define Vision because also with the four haptics, they're so stable in the eye. They fit in the back. They center nicely. So actually, that's my favorite IOL, together with the trifocal from Hoya, the Geometric. And maybe I need to dive deeper in that technology. You have the Geometric and the Geometric Plus. They are the same platform based on the Vivinex IOL. Do you have the availability of the Vivinex monofocal?
No.
So the Vivinex platform is a very stable platform as well. And also, I love the injector. It's the multi-cert injector. You can push or you can screw. It's preloaded. And also the nozzle, you can advance it so that only the tip goes into the incision. Or if you like it, you can retract the nozzle so the tip of the cartridge goes into the anterior chamber. So you have a versatility with that multi-cert injector as much as possible. But that platform, the Geometric and Geometric Plus, is a trifocal IOL. And what is so unique about it is that with the Geometric, so the energy going to distance and is higher than with the Geometric Plus. And with the Geometric Plus lens, the energy distribution going to the near is higher than with the Geometric. So it's not mix and match. It's what we call pairing. So we pair the Geometric with the Geometric Plus. It actually, Professor Kaimak from Dusseldorf did that study. He found out that it doesn't matter where you put the Geometric Plus. Instinctively, you would say, I put the Geometric Plus in the near dominant eye. But he found out because of that light distribution, it's the same, but the energy going to near and far is different between the platforms. And you get with the Geometric an extremely good intermediate vision as well. So you get a very smooth transition from distance intermediate to near with that platform. Actually, I'm doing a study with this lens now because most studies are done in cataract patients, and I'm doing it now with clear lens patients. So the 40, 50 years old or 55 years old. So I hope to finish that study soon and that I can publish it because it's a very nice platform as well. That together with the Fine Vision are my two favorite lenses, which are not approved in the FDA yet.
Hopefully we'll have them at some point soon, but those sound great. I love the approach about that. Sounds very interesting. Different than what we have now. But I certainly think we want more options available. I'd rather have more options than fewer options. And exactly. Then, as you say, tailor it to the patient.
Yes. But you will find your favorite lens, as I did during the years. As I said, I used all of them. And and you get the best results in your hands with that type of lens. So you stick to it, of course. That's how you find out.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you. I can't believe it's already been almost an hour. Time flies. Look at that.
Having fun. Always with you, Uday.
Yeah, we always have a good time. So yes. I want to thank you for doing the podcast. Truly a pleasure. So many great pearls that I think a young ophthalmologist will learn a lot from during this last hour.
It's absolute my pleasure to talk to you and to share pearls because I think we have so many cataract patients out there. So many patients want to get rid of glasses but I think not enough hands to do it. And right. For sure, we need to educate and keep on educating all of our young colleagues to get the best out of them, to perform the best they can, and to have happy patients and patients free of glasses, freedom of glasses, vision for lifetime. I think that's in our minds all the time, yours as well, I think. And you're also doing a great job educating them. And so please keep continue doing that. Please.
Will do. Thank you. I want to remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new podcast every single week. Always something interesting. You'll find the podcast on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, everywhere you find your podcast. Plus, of course, we have a new Cataract Coach surgical video every single day. So until next time, I'll catch you later.